brought to you by Penguin.
Fancy Bear Goes Fishing by Scott Shapiro. Read by Jonathan Todd Ross. Introduction. The Brilliant Project. I think I really fucked up. Paul knew that Robert was in serious trouble. The quiet, bespectacled 22-year-old graduate student never swore. Paul later testified at Robert's trial that his friend was usually sort of puritanical in his speech. That is why I thought something really major must be wrong. Something really major was wrong. Paul's friend had just crashed the internet. The call came in at 11 p.m., November 2, 1988. Robert Morris Jr., a Ph.D. student in computer science at Cornell, described the unfolding disaster to Paul Graham, a graduate student at Harvard. Earlier that night, around 8 p.m., Robert sat at a terminal in room 4160 of Upson Hall, then home to Cornell's computer science department in Ithaca, New York, and remotely logged in to prep.ai.mit.edu, a VAX 11750 computer at MIT's Artificial Intelligence Lab in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He transferred and executed three files, thereby releasing what he and Paul had called the Brilliant Project, a self-replicating program, a computer worm. The worm was programmed to infect computers on the then-nascent internet. After it infiltrated one computer, that computer would serve as a base from which to infect others. With each new target, the worm would copy itself and dispatch its clone to a new home. Working in tandem, the worm and its clones would continue multiplying until they had completed their mission and colonized the entire internet. Robert's motivation was purely scientific. He wanted to build a program that could explore cyberspace. He was trying to infect as many computers as he could, simply to see how many he could infect, not to wreak havoc by crashing them. But when Robert returned from dinner to check the progress of his experiment, he noticed that the network was sluggish. There was a conspicuous lag between typing and characters appearing on the screen, and between command and execution. The worm was spreading too quickly and consuming too many resources. It had boomeranged from Cambridge back to Ithaca in under 3 hours and was taking over his department's network. And this was just the beginning. Robert's worm didn't just cripple the Cornell network. It was barreling through the internet, trouncing everything in its path. Just a few minutes after its release at MIT, the worm's first known infection occurred at the University of Pittsburgh. From Pittsburgh, the worm zoomed cross-country and hit RAND.org, the network for the RAND Corporation in Santa Monica, California, at 8:24 p.m. Within the hour, computer managers at RAND noticed their network slowing. Several nodes were at a standstill. At 9 p.m., the worm was spotted creeping around the Stanford Research Institute. By 9:30 p.m., it was at the University of Minnesota. At 10:04, it infiltrated Berkeley's Gateway machine, the computer that served as the university's portal to the internet. Almost immediately, computer administrators noticed an unusually large load on the machine and a backlog in their system. At midnight, administrators at MIT returned from an ice cream break to discover their network was failing, too. At 1:05 a.m., the worm penetrated Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, a site responsible for securing the country's nuclear arsenal. Soon, the worm had burrowed into the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico, the home of the Manhattan Project, and the world's first atomic bombs. Robert's brilliant
sample complete. Ready to continue?